Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. It's getting close to the end of the range retreat now. Another range retreat has gone past. This is my 33rd range retreat. And every year, as we get older, closer to death, closer to old age, I was going to chant that reflection which we are all supposed to do from time to time. Jara dhammam hi jarang anatito, bayadi dhammam hi bayading anatito, marana dhammam hi maranang anatito. Sabehi me piyehi, mana pehi nana bawo, winabawo, kama sotkom hi kama dayado, kama yoni, kama dayado, kama pati sarano, yang kamang karisami, kalyana wa papa kangwa, tasa dayado barisami. These are five reflections for one who gone forth. Means that I am the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. For those of you who think you've already aged, you've got some more to go yet. Bayadi dhammami bayading anatito. I'm the nature to sicken. For those of us who've got hay fever, those of you who've got sore knees, sore bladders, sore whatever, you know that you are the nature to sicken. Some of you are sick already, some of you get better, then you get sick again. And lastly, I am the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. And that can happen any time. That all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, all of that I will become separated from. I am born of my karma. My karma is my womb. Heir to my karma. Abide supported by my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, good or bad, of that I shall be the heir. Five reflections for one gone forth. What that really means is that, you know, part of our life here, you know, we should reflect, especially those of you who, you know, aren't really all that old. Those of you under 40, especially under 50 even, some of you still got your strength and good health. When you get over 50, you start sort of falling apart. For those over 60, you know, you're way over the falling apart. You know, you have trouble keeping things together. And those over sort of 70, you know, you're on the way out. You're in the waiting room. And this is actually true because it's one of those reflections when you get to, you know, this is my 57th year. When you get to, you know, even like 57, just you start to wake up in the morning. And gee, that was only yesterday you were 20. You're going out with girls, running around, playing soccer, not really worrying about your health at all. Just the life goes very quickly indeed. This 3 months range retreat has gone very fast. It won't be that long when you wake up and you're 56 or you're 70. This is a reflection because what that actually does, it puts our life in perspective. Sometimes when we just look at this moment, this year, or you know, just this day, sometimes we're like crazy people, we can't see the big picture. With one of my favourite stories, this was from the commentaries, but it's a very lovely story of the King Asoka's brother who was always really interested in girls, pleasures. He just wanted relationships. But then, he also has, like many people who have any sensory desires, like the power, because the power will give you the freedom to follow your desires wherever they will lead. And so that he always hoped maybe one day he'd take over from his brother and become the emperor. And Emperor saw that he wasn't at all interested in Buddhism, just didn't understand the Dhamma. So he left his royal regalia by the bathhouse when he went for a bathe and arranged for one of his ministers to take his brother past the robe, regalia, and the minister, taking the Asoka's brother past, pointed out, hey, these robes here, the emperor must be bathing. You know, you're going to be emperor one day, try them on. He said, I can't, because that's against the law. That's a capital offence. I'll try them on, no one will know. So he tried them on, and of course, it was all a set-up. The soaker came out. What are you doing wearing my robes? that's a capital offence. I can't stop you, even though you're my brother. I have to apply the law fairly. I'm sorry, brother, but you'll have to be executed. And many of you know this story, but the main part of the story was the Ahsoka said, because you're my brother, and because you want to be the emperor so much, because you wear in my robes, you can be the emperor for 7 days. You can enjoy all of the privileges, except you can't commute your own sentence. And you can enjoy all the pleasures of the harem, all the food from my kitchens, everything you want, all the musicians, for 7 days, and I'll execute you. At the end of those 7 days, he brought his brother to him with the execution awaiting and said, did you enjoy yourself for 7 days? And he said, how could I enjoy myself? I was going to be killed in 7 days. Today's my execution day. I didn't even sleep, let alone enjoy myself. How can you enjoy yourself when you know you're going to die in a few days' time? And that was the whole purpose of the object lesson. King Ahsoka told him, said 7 days, or 7 months, or 7 years, or 27 years. How can you enjoy yourself when you know that death is waiting for you? Or as it says in the suttas, when you're like a cow being led to slaughter. So each one of you is like a cow being led to your death. And so when you start to think like that, sometimes it really wakes you up. I remember sort of a dream I had a long time ago. It was a very vivid dream. It was a dream that for many, many years, you know, I had a wife, lived with her, and just woke up just one morning, just in a hovel, and just realized, what have I done? So many years had wasted, and now I was old. And just with that realization, there was this incredible nibbida. Nibbida is this disgust, this repulsion about what you've been doing. It's as if you've been drugged and now you wake up. As if you haven't seen clearly and now someone's opened your eyes and, gee, what have I done? Just like that famous story of the man sold the dirty old cloth by the con artist because he was blind, and when he got his sight back, what have I been sold? It was a dirty cloth and they told me it was a clean one. Sometimes when you open your eyes to the Dhamma, and one of the ways of opening those eyes to the Dhamma is to see the big picture of what this life is all about. It gives rise to that nibbida, that repulsion. When you know you're native to age, you're native to sicken. This body of yours, any one of you as a doctor, just know just how vulnerable this body is to all sorts of diseases and sicknesses. And even just reading the reports of, if you're not sick, just those monks in Burma, many of them were apparently lined up against a brick wall, and the army took hold of their heads and smashed their heads into that brick wall, broke their skulls. They didn't die straight away, maybe hours later. And they're just monks, just like you, probably good monks, in the wrong place at the wrong time. So are you ready to have your skull bashed like that? Sometimes these things can happen. I know that sometimes that when people are on the edge of things, remember that when I was a young monk in Thailand, the communist armies were just over the other side of the border. One of our monasteries got shelled close to the Cambodian border in Nam Yuen Monastery. I was going to be sent there by Ajahn Chah. It was a time to go to be sent to the various branch monasteries. And I was about to go, the Ajahn Chah said, no, we're not going to send you there now. Because I was afraid that if there was a Western monk there, the Khmer Rouge were just on the other side, and may go and kidnap me or kill me or something. But the shells fell in the monastery, aimed at the police station next door, but they fell in the monastery. So sometimes at that time, you didn't know whether, you know, you were going to survive, you know, whether the communist troops would actually come in. And certainly whenever I looked on a map, you know, Ubon, the distance from Ubon to Hanoi was half the distance as it was to Bangkok. Bangkok was twice as far away as Hanoi. So you'd have a hard time escaping. But that was a wonderful time, because you knew there was a very possible sort of death for you. Well, it's the same when you went on Tudong and there's so many snakes around. never saw tigers, but I went to one place where there was lots of elephants, and they could very easily kill you too. And so because you were in the jungles, because you were close to death, sometimes that just made the whole life look a bit more different. The only dangerous animals we have in this monastery are the kangaroos, so you don't really get the same feeling here. But at least you should know that just the nature of your body, the sickness there, the disease is there. We've just been charging for all these people with cancers, who had car accidents, who had MSA. You could have a cancer right inside of you now. Just it hasn't sort of developed yet, you haven't seen it yet, it's just coming. Now those are real truths, real reflections. Are you ready for that yet? If it hasn't come yet, it will come one day, if you last that long. What that actually really does is, this is the possibilities of my life. This is the big picture. You're not going to get into denial. What the hell are you going to do about that? And the point is, there is an opportunity to do something. Because when we think of like the old age sickness and death, you know, of this body, it is to do with the body. It is to do with this vehicle which we have, which we identify with too much, which we care for too much, which we indulge in too much. We look at this is the nature of this body. This is what it really is. This is body, body, body. It gets old, gets sick and dies. It's very fragile. It's heavy. It's hard to sort of get up in the morning. It's hard to walk around. You know, if you have hay fever, you have this nose which is always itchy at this time of the year and you just can't stop it. You get up in the morning, you sneeze for a couple of hours and wear yourself out. It's the nature. And the point is, if you think that you can avoid that, you're being stupid. You're just in denial, you're not being real. But what you can do is to make sure that this is your last body. You don't get into this again. Strange thing about life, you get all the pleasure and happiness at the beginning, and you have to pay for it for years afterwards. You get what's called the madayobana. It's just the delusion, the intoxication of youth, or the delusion, intoxication of health. If you're healthy, you think that's the normal state of affairs. If you're young, you think it will last forever. But it's not the normal state of affairs. The normal state of affairs is just the aging of this body. It's not just the aging of the body, it's aging of everything, whatever pleasures you get. Even if you do get a relationship, in the beginning it's the fun part and you have to pay for it afterwards when it all fades. It's the nature of everything which arises. To be beautiful in the beginning, and to get dirty, to fade, to get disgusting later on. Whether it's a flower or a tree or even a monastery, you can start to see the cracks already, see the whole thing just fading and disappearing and falling apart. All things are like that. Sometimes people keep their relationships together, but it's like propped up just because of convenience. No real sort of pleasure in it anymore. You get the pleasure first, you have to pay for it afterwards. And when you understand that, it gives you this nibbida towards all this sensory realm, towards this body, towards relationships, even towards building monasteries, to coming and going, all these sort of projects which we have, big deal, so what? It's all going to fade away. It was great being a sort of a scientist, to know that just even in this great earth, I don't know how many, what is it, I think rather 10,000 billion years or something, the sun is going to sort of expand. It expands so much that this earth will be vaporized and all gone. Everything, whether it's the Great Wall of China, which I mentioned last week, it comes up in every week's talk these days, or the Taj Mahal, or everything will just be vaporized into dust. There'll be nothing left. No sort of record of human beings or anything being here. So great, I love that sort of reflection, because it means that just it's all gone. Nothing lasts. Nothing is permanent at all. All records of your existence will no longer be there, even of the Buddha's existence. Whole Tripitaka, everything gone forever. So nature. And so what that actually does, it gives a new perspective on life. So many people who are in denial to such truths, who think that, no, death's going to be a long way away, who cares about that, I'll deal with that when I get to it. those are the sorts of people that when you do get to the old age, that's when you look back at how long, how have I spent my life. For me, I'm at the end of my 57th year, it's not so upsetting that I'm so old. So I look back and I spent 33 years as a monk, 33 years training my mind, living a pure life, getting peace and happiness and serving others. So I'm in a really good position. And probably if every person is 57 years of age in this country of Australia, I'm probably in one of the best positions of all. So I look back and I have used my time wisely. But if I hadn't chosen to be a monk and gone and got married and become a business person or something, I wouldn't have as much feeling of security and peace and having feel I've done something really worthwhile. I'd be like that dream, waking up and what the hell have I done? How long have I wasted my time? The reflection on old age, sickness and death gives you a different perspective on life. Which is why that we should go deeper into that. That meditation which Ajahn Chitambalo was recommending. The walking path. I will die, that's for sure. 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 It's a great sort of mantra to tell yourself. And for those of you who think, yeah, you've done that, been there, so you understand you're going to die, sort of try it. Because you don't realize the importance of that. If you're a stream winner, then okay, you don't need to do such things anymore. You've understood. But if you're not a stream winner, it's important to be able to see deeply and the fact that you are going to die. Because that changes the way that the mind looks. Instead of being attracted and attached to the sensory world, it gets nibbida towards it. It's the opposite of the upadana and the craving. You get a rejection of it. What am I doing this for? What's the purpose of this? Why on earth have I done this? You all know that that final story in the opening the door of your heart, the worm in the pile of dung. And sometimes that, you know, that's what I feel like I'm having to always do, trying to pull all the worms out of the pile of dung. And you really try my hardest to sort of serve and write books and give talks and, you know, give interviews and try and pull you out of your piles of dung. But so often people just don't want to go. You pull them out a little bit, you get them ordained. You show them the monk's life. And then decide to go and crawl back into the dung pile again. It's such a shame. I'm not just saying this because this is, if you read Buddha suttas, this is how the Buddha teaches. And this is not to be true to myself. This is, you know, how I see things. The beauty, the peace, what's there for you in monastic life is actually real freedom there. But people don't realize it because they haven't understood suffering. So I said last week, what is happiness? Which is the freedom of monastic life, of peace of mind, of having few possessions, having no relationships, being free, unencumbered, untied down. That type of freedom people think is suffering. What the Aryas say is suffering. You know, which is getting involved in the world, having to go to work, worrying about mortgages, worrying about getting through, worrying about your relationship, does she love me, does she care for me, is she going to marry me, blah, blah, blah. All of that sort of stuff. People take that as happiness. But I know that as lots and lots and lots of suffering. I've been there, done that. I know what I'm talking about. However, some people, they think, well, I haven't been there yet, haven't done that yet, I've got to find out that it hurts. They've got to put their hand in the fire and burn themselves. And then they say, Ajahn Brahm, you're right, Buddha, yeah, but it's a bit late then, you've been caught. It's wonderful to be wise, to be smart, to use your wisdom, and to get your life on track. To not just follow what other people do, but to actually understand for yourself what's really true, what is a path of freedom and happiness. To really take that. This is your life. What you do is going to affect you, not just today, but look how it's going to affect you in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years' time. How are you going to be prepared for sicknesses such as cancer, for your old age and for your death. Don't think like a nursing home is all you need to worry about or get superannuation. It's nothing to do with your resources, your material resources. It's all to do with your spiritual resources. Your ability to let go of your health and to realize it wasn't my health anyway, it's just the nature of the body. To bear being sick, being weak. To bear somebody wiping your arse of shit because you can't wipe it yourself. All those little things, that's what you have to learn. You have to learn how to die, how to let go of everything. You don't own anything. Those people who learn how to die early, in other words, to die to the world, to die to all their possessions, to die to all their hopes of material happiness, they're the ones who find the other way. Their nibbada towards the world stops these aswas, these outflowings of the mind. When we just did the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, we just chanted it, you can see in those final points, you know, all these five khandhas, the body, feeling, perception, will, consciousness, is that permanent or impermanent? It's impermanent. What's impermanent? Is that happiness or is that dukkha? That's dukkha. Is what's dukkha when worth regarding as me, mine or self? No. And so when you understand that those khandhas are dukkha, when you understand that relationships are dukkha, that sex is dukkha, that possessions is dukkha, that fantasies are dukkha, this body is dukkha. One body is enough. Five khandhas is more than enough. Having 10 khandhas to worry about, you and your girlfriend. And what happens next? You have 10 khandhas, then you have 15 khandhas and 20 khandhas. And you have kids. And gee, you must be mad to want that. Absolutely crazy. I can't sort of figure it out myself how anyone with any sense can want to do that. Want all that worry when you can be free. It's like a person who's like in a jail. And the door's open. Come on, come out. Have some freedom. No, they want to stay in the jail. Not only want to stay in the jail, they put like more manacles on themselves. And they tie themselves up with this ball and chain, you know, called wife. And once they've got wife ball and chain on one leg, then they put another ball and chain called kids on another. And they think that's fun. They can't go anywhere. It's crazy. When you understand old age, sickness and death, you understand there's a problem. And what I'm doing by just going out into that world or thinking and fantasizing or cracking jokes and enjoying myself, what I'm doing, I'm just wasting time. It's a problem which needs to be solved. The trouble is most people that when the problem is not right in front of their face, they don't really concern about it. When they're sick, yeah, then they're concerned about being sick. When they're old, yeah, then we'll do something about being old. When they're about to die, then they'll try and do something about dying. But the problem is you're supposed to do it a long time before. It's just like those kids who do all their reading before the exam the night before. It's just too late. They should have done it months ago. So it's the same with the great exam of death or old age or sickness. For those exams, you have to do your homework now, when you're still young, when you're not sick, when you're fully alive. This is actually how we can prepare for those exams, which are going to come. And the way we prepare for those exams is we just abandon concern for bodies and material things. You can see what material things do in the world. You know, people getting rich and worrying about their big houses and their cars and how much shares they've got and how their wife is, and they get a mistress, they get sort of, or another boyfriend, and gee, just it's endless. But it's wonderful being free when you don't need that. When you can see a girl, and maybe a really pretty girl, and you just don't move. The mind just sees them as a person, another being in samsara, who's subject to the same old age, sickness and death as you are. You see them no different than a fellow monk, just a being in a woman's body, not a sexual object, not an object of desire. It's wonderful when you can look at people like that. It means you're free. some of those desires which are inside of us. They just make us so hot. They can sort of keep us thinking all day and fantasizing and wasting so much time. Sometimes people like that. That's like the Buddhist simile of the leper with the itch who just wants to put it over the fire because it feels a little bit better, but they're burning themselves. If we could only understand what was really going on, we could let go of those things. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will one day become separated from me. I remember just the first time I went over to England, Ajahn Sumedha was telling the story of a couple who lived close by to Chittas, who had the perfect marriage. Husband, wife, fallen in love when they were young, and hardly ever had an argument at all. I don't believe that anyone ever has an argument. Everyone has arguments. But they lived pretty happily together, until one of them got terrible arthritis, and they were in constant pain. And basically, that they would let go and die, but the other partner would not let them. Even though you're in great pain and great suffering, darling, just I can't stand it without you. There's a wonderful illustrative situation where one partner had to suffer because the other one would not let them go. That was the end of a good relationship. It's as if all the happiness was now having to be paid back, which is what the Buddha said with sensory desires. It's like taking out a loan. However much you take out, you have to pay it back afterwards with interest. Whatever pleasure from the sensory world that you take, you have to pay it back with disappointment, frustration, suffering. You know that because every time someone falls in love, when their love is not met, they get devastated. And sometimes they get even suicidal. They get broken hearts. And I have to sometimes deal with those when they bring their daughters or their sons to come and see me after something's happened. And this is however much happiness you had when you fell in love. Now that's what you've got to pay for afterwards. It does not last. When it does break down, what's going to happen? So when you look at the sensory pleasures, when you look at sort of the body, it just doesn't make sense to follow it. When you investigate that way, that all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will one day become separated from me, then you're not so interested anymore in such sensory pleasures. And when you're not so interested in sensory pleasures, when you're not so interested in this body, you say, well, my commitment is to being free of these bodies, to let go of these bodies, to make sure I don't get any more bodies. Why do I keep getting reborn? Why do I sort of keep worrying about this body? And you understand that that is the attachment of the body, which is one of the first things a monk has to understand and let go of. We do sort of body contemplations for that. You know, whether it's the 32 or 31 parts of the body, plus the brain in the commentaries. We do those contemplations to understand what's going on. Or we see those autopsies. If you're very lucky and see autopsies over in Thailand, it's very hard to see them over here now. It's great being able to see a young girl's autopsy and see her breast taken out and see everything just unfolded. And just, it's yucky. You just don't want to sort of have anything to do with them. Or see someone your own age on the slab. Of all the autopsies which I saw, and I've seen some gross autopsies, but the one which really sort of shook me was a young man about the same age as me. Because I could identify with that. Even as I was telling the Anagarikas and novices of seeing the bloated corpses, you know, dragged from the river Chao Phraya in Sirirat Hospital, seeing them pop with the stick with a nail on the end. Very, very high tech, completely unhygienic, but that's what, how they did it. But that was more sort of interesting. But when actually you saw someone your own age on the slab, that really sort of hit me. I remember that time very well. You realize, yeah, I am of the nature to get old. I'm the nature to sicken and die. Somehow or other, I knew that, but it hadn't really gone in deep enough. When it has gone in deep enough, you understand one of the great sufferings of this human existence. Buddha saw the old man, the sick man, and the dead man, and that was enough to make him live the holy life and to find an answer to this, a freedom from it. It gave him the motivation to find freedom. Otherwise, it is like, you know, you're suffering torture. As I mentioned in the chanting, some of the Burmese monks now in the jails being tortured. They're monks just like you. You just don't want to imagine just what they're going through, the degrees of pain they're feeling. But you're subject to that as well. May not be by a torturer, but just by the torturer called old age, sickness, and even death. You think, gee, how can I avoid that? How can I not get caught by the tortures of old age, sickness, and death? And there is a way out. When we contemplate our body in this way, the reason, just contemplating it, sort of thinking about it, reflecting upon it, getting it deep inside, I will die, that's for sure. I will get sick, that's for sure. If you don't get anything else, the in thing at the moment is getting cancer. I will get cancer, that's for sure. You think what's going on? What it does is it gives you a repulsion to this body, the attachment to the body, the concern, the involvement, the infatuation with the body just disappears. When the infatuation with your body disappears, infatuation with other bodies disappears. You never look at a girl as being a pretty girl. It's just a body which has got the same heart, lungs, stuff which you've got. You think, gee, that she's subject to suffering and sickness, so am I. Let's get out of this. And when you reflect upon the body that way, the result of that is the nibbida towards the body, which gives a natural sense restraint. You don't allow the mind to sort of get lustful or to get ill will. What are you getting ill will towards? That body of a person is sicker than not now, that's going to be sick. It's why that when somebody comes and they say they've got cancer, you don't get angry and upset at them, no matter what they do. You have sympathy for them because they're in pain, they're suffering, they're about to die. So any anger or ill will just can't come up in you towards someone when you know they're dying. So I can't get angry at anyone in this monastery when I know they're dying, no matter what they say or do or don't do or how lazy they are. When you look upon that to other people, just hindrances such as ill will or lust just cannot come up. It counters those. And in its place, it gives you the nibbida, the repulsion, which just turns away from the body, turns away from your own body. Instead of just worrying about this, you just sit down, close your eyes, and you go to the realm of the mind. The nibbida towards the body, the reason why people do body contemplation is to understand the truth, nature of this body, so you can abandon it. And the knowledge of abandoning the body, or the realization you can do this, is when the whole thing disappears, and you can let it disappear. Good riddance, when the hands disappear. About time, when your legs disappear. At last, when the whole back disappears. Whoopee, when the breath disappears. When the whole body just vanishes. So at last, I'm free from this body. In a sense, you are practicing how to die. That's what the meditation of jhanas is like. You're actually learning how to die properly. And you're going to do it sooner or later. This is the training. You're learning how to let go of your body. If you can't do it when you're healthy, how do you reckon you're going to let go of your body when it's really aching and in pain? Even now that when you've got aches and pains in the body, is it easy to meditate? Is it easy to really watch the breath and allow the mind to sort of to turn away from the body? What's it going to be like when you're sick and in pain and dying or weak or haven't got much energy left? It's much, much harder then. So when you have health, when the body is reasonably okay, or even when, as it is now, because it's going to get worse, as it is now, see if you can let go of the body now. Train yourself. In other words, you sit down, cross your legs, close your eyes, present moment awareness, silence. Because remember, all of your thinking is about bodies, the world, things. Stop all of that, just stay with the breathing, and allow the breath to become beautiful, and allow the body to disappear as you're focusing on the breath. You can't feel anything in the legs or the head, anything. You don't know where the body is. You don't give a damn where it is. It's just disappeared. And finally, you just got the breath. The breath becomes beautiful. You get nimittas come up, and at that point, the body's gone. Freedom from the body. This is what happens when you die. The nimitta, same as that light people see when they leave their body at death or have near-death experiences. You're training how to let the body alone, leave it, let it go, to be free from it. Just doing that much, you've gone a long way. Let go of your attachment to this body. And you go into such stages, as you all know, even nimitta stages, is wonderful, blissful, better than sex, better than a relationship. And it's not that hard to do when you let go of the body. If you still attach to the body, it's hard to do. And what you're really attached to is suffering. You're attached to dukkha. You're being stupid. You're just holding on to hot coals. And someone comes, let it go. Drop it. And get out of the shit if you're a worm. It's much nicer outside. And if one can do that, then one realizes your own experience comes. And even if you haven't got those nimittas yet, let's keep on saying that every one of you, when in your interviews, you always have some meditation experiences, some bit of peace, some stillness, which has given you enough of a taste of freedom to know that all what I'm saying is not just fantasy, it's not made up, it's truth. You understand that what I'm saying is valid. So all it needs to do is to take it further and drop the body more. And when you do, you bliss out. Your understanding, the body, is not just subject to sickness, old age and death. The body is, even now, a huge heap of suffering. This was an incredible, powerful realization when you get into a deep meditation. Again, nimittas is enough to get this realization. You get into jhana, which is so clear. That this body is a mass of suffering. It hurts. All the time. The trouble is, because we've got used to hurting all the time, we don't recognize it. Ajahn Chah gave this wonderful simile, and I repeated it in the Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond book, of a person being born with a rope tied around their neck, and these two demons were pulling on the rope from either side. We never actually said who those demons were, but sometimes I've called those demons like desire and ill will, or sometimes you call them like will and attachment to the body. And those demons, they pull that rope tight continuously, but because it's always been tight, because you always have not been able to breathe properly, you've got used to that, and you can't recognize it anymore. You think that's ordinary. This is life. Yeah, this is ordinary. Yeah, sometimes you have a good day, sometimes you have a bad day. But you know, it's pretty okay. But then one day that, for one reason or another, maybe because you do a bit of meditation, you push the right buttons, the rope gets loosened. Even if you just, you know, can be able to watch a beautiful breath, you have a decent meditation for once, that rope is loosened enough so you can breathe. Wow, it's so peaceful, it's so nice. If you get into a nimitta stage, the rope is loosened almost completely. Wow, this is nice. This is where the pleasure comes from. It means because a whole heap of suffering is gone. So actually you're realizing a great truth of Buddhism. Something the Buddha realized. Not through theory, but through a pure, direct experience, when you let go of this body. And by letting go means you have enough nibbida towards it, you don't give it any attention, it fades away and disappears, you can't feel anything in the body at all, you don't know where the legs are, you can't reach them, they're off the radar screen of the mind. So that is so happy. And we don't have to be the rocket scientist to know that the reason why that's happy is because a whole lot of suffering has gone. The demons have let go of the rope. You can breathe again. So nice. And it's your own experience. You don't need to read it in the books. You've done it. Just that much. Well, that should do to you, for you, is to give you the direct insight of what we're trying to do here. The nature of this body is to get old, to get sick, to die. But you can go transcend that by letting go of this body, by detaching from this body, by going to the realm of the mind. At least you've overcome the attachment to the body. At least you can become a non-returner. Otherwise you keep coming back to this world, and who knows where you're going to be born next. For those of you who don't believe in rebirth, gee, you are having a hard time. There's so much truth in that, so much evidence staring you in the face. Again, sometimes denial. A lot of times people don't believe these things just because they don't want to, because it's too painful to face up to the truth. When you actually look deeply, you find that, yeah, that's the truth. And I've had enough deep meditations that, you know, I can go on record, I know there is rebirth. It's one of the most obvious things for myself. But because of that, you say, well, look, please don't get reborn again, especially as a human being. Who knows where you might get reborn next time? All the Kubra Ajahns say the same. Buddha says the same. And there's only one way of doing that, which is to cut the attachment to your own body and other people's bodies, and with it to material things. You've got this wonderful path, the Eightfold Path. My job is to try and give you enough right view, and then from your right view you've got your intention of, again, letting go of the body, letting go of sensory things, of gentleness and kindness, you know, keeping your precepts, you know, doing the right speech, right action, right livelihoods. The effort just to get on your cushion, to get on your walking path, to walk a lot, sit a lot, and to be mindful enough, aware enough, to know where you are, what you're doing, in silence, in the present moment, and allow the mind to get still so it can leave the body a long way behind. When you let go of your attachment to your body in that way, even for a small amount of time, you just loosen it. And you see what it's like. And you know what it's going to be like. If you keep on doing this, it has to happen. It's only a matter of time, as I keep saying. And you know that if you haven't done it yet, it's because you really haven't been applying yourself to the task. You've been wasting time. But if you apply yourself and you don't waste time, this is what happens. You realize what the Buddha realized. 5 senses are suffering. Of course, the 6th sense is suffering as well, but it's less suffering. You get that one afterwards. Get anagami first, and then you get arahat. So understand what this body is like. At least be free of that. Be a holy one. Be a sort of someone who's at peace with themselves. And you can lead other people into peace. Examples in this world. So you can really help other people, humanity, to actually to disentangle themselves from the body, their own body, other people's bodies and things. So they can live simply in this world, quietly, understanding a huge heap of happiness because they've let go a lot of suffering. The body is suffering. The 5 senses are suffering. Again, later on you can let go of the mind as well, but for the time being, just do that much. Then you understand that, you know, all that's my beloved and pleasing, especially these things in the world, you can't hold on to them, you have to let them go. This is ordinary wisdom, but sometimes we forget these things, we start to accumulate things. It starts instead of simplifying our lives. When we have fewer possessions, I'm talking about material possessions, we have greater happiness. The more things you have in your hut, the harder it is to clean, and the more entangled it all is. The less you have, the more free you feel. And again, I was just telling some visitors the other day, just the memories I have of the 2 dong years, when I didn't hardly had anything at all. I carried it all on my back, and it wasn't much. I see people on 2 dong these days, gee, they've got big bags. I did away with my bowl bag, as you see even the way I travel now. I don't know why people have to have all these bags. And they've got a bag for the bowl and the bag to keep the bag for the bowl clean. It's a stupid idea. And just one bag for your bowl is enough. Why do you want another bag for the bag? Probably next you have a bag for the bag for the bag. So all it is sometimes people just follow others. Oh, it's a custom now. This is what other monks have. Or this is what, you know, is the latest fashion for monks. But you shouldn't do things like that. You should rebel against fashions. And be simple. Go for the Buddha fashion. The simple, the less you have, the more peace and happiness you find. And of course, you should know that by now. Some of you accumulate things. But you know the less, when you give things away, you feel freedom. You've had enough experience now, you're not stupid, you understand. So I just take that further, just see how much you can let go, how much you can free yourself of the world. Because really all you're doing is freeing yourself from suffering, from dukkha. And that's how we understand Four Noble Truths. Not just by reading the books and theorizing, but by practicing it. We let go of things of the world, because the nature to age, we are the nature to sicken, we are the nature to die, these things don't belong to us, all that's mine, beloved and pleasing, will one day be taken away from me anyway. Let's get rid of it now. When I went to see my mother, you know, she's demented now. So my mother's already been taken away from me. I can see her body, but her mind is gone. It's great to be able to let go of your parents. Just without any sort of wobble at all in the mind. They weren't mine anyway. Just people who looked after me at the beginning of this life. I've had many parents. This was just the latest pair. So why should I be so concerned? It was great actually seeing my father die. Being woken up in the middle of the night by my mother. Can't wake your father. And just shaking him. Just shaking a dead body. This was my own dad, the one I loved. And you could shake him. And he was dead. He was a body, not a person. It was very lucky to become so close to death. And see, yeah, my dad's died. That's what death is like. You know, he was only about 47, I think, or 45 or whatever. So I've already sort of, I've done 9 more years than my father had. So I'm just almost extra time. So when you think like that, you know, it's very easy to understand death. Because I understand death so well, you're not so attached to this body, you can get into meditation, you can get into deep meditations. You can get into bliss, you can get into freedom, you can understand the Buddha's teachings. You can be independent, you don't need other people, you don't care what other people say or do. You don't need wives or girlfriends or relationships, you can go back to your hut and just bliss out and become free. Don't you want that? It's on offer. You can do it. If you haven't done it yet, you know why. It's not that you can't do it. It's just you won't do it. So there, it's up to you. So the door to the deathless is open. It's up to you to walk through that door. And don't get old, don't get sick, don't get die ever again. Make this the last time. That's the talk this evening.
Sadhu, 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 sad